Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
On Monday night, he issued a sudden freeze on federal grants that was so sweeping, so broad, so poorly thought out that it created immediate chaos across the state of Arizona, across the entire United States.
My question would be the opposite. Why should the courts not reflect the population? Why should a state that is so diverse have a Supreme Court that looks like one racial aspect of our state?
You want to make sure you reach a threshold of support where it looks, everything looks great for the primary, everything looks good for the general, and that's when you're make sure you're all in.
For now, we will cover the cost of the Isaac Elementary School District, get their payroll, and we want to send the message to the teachers that more help is on the way.
But obviously we take very seriously what she has to say. We also have the benefit, though, of seeing how it worked over the last 10 years. 6.9% still allowed the fund to nearly double in size.
We are seeing, though, overall, is there's not much of a difference between what was happening during the Biden administration and the Trump administration. And so far, this is more what it seems like to be a show, an act.
And joining me to talk about Arizona's newest Supreme Court justice, changes in the governor's office, and more are Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Good morning, Barrett.
Good Friday morning.
And Democratic strategist Tony Khani. Tony, good morning, too.
Good morning.
So Barrett, first, there's a James Beard Award winner.
Nominee.
Okay. And I got no, eggs with, some, crab or lobster in them waiting for me? Like, some beautiful dish here?
If you had put in your order ahead of time, I would have been able to help you out.
This is so disappointing.
Sorry, man. Sorry. Well, so speaking of not having things, the federal government might not be sending money to the states. The President Trump issued an executive order, a memo then that was rescinded. But there's still some questions about whether or not that money is coming. And Barrett, this Arizona gets a pretty good amount of money from the federal government. This could be a pretty huge thing if it doesn't come, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, every state, we all pay into the buckets and then the buckets flow this way. When dealing with, hundreds of millions and even billions of dollars, it's great to have a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. I've seen the memo, this executive order from – I'm sorry, it wasn't even an executive order. It was a memo from OMB has out there, freezing everything. And then they said they've rescinded the memo, but not the policy, just the memo. And it's it's created a lot of confusion and, we do rely on, Meals on Wheels and mm-hmm. things like that. And, we saw that the Medicaid portal in almost every state was down. They're back up now. So there is a lot of confusion. And, before we get to Tony, who will have an immense amount of things to say about this, I will say that, this flood the zone thing that they are doing is probably pretty effective because they'll do 10 things. Three of which we will be incredibly up in arms about, three of which, we'll question about and complain and make jokes of, and then four we don't even notice. And it's, that's the point of it, right? We don't notice some of the stuff that they're doing because there's so many other things, the chaos that's created. So.
And Tony, some of these things are things that people do notice. Barrett mentioned Meals on Wheels, Medicaid, things that people in their day-to-day lives kind of rely on.
Yeah, this is very important stuff. If there's something to get up in arms about, it's this. And the fact that people were up in arms, it's why they either rescinded or whatever it is that they did. I mean, this isn't really a freeze. They just made a decision unilaterally to stop providing resources to the most vulnerable people in our country. At the behest, apparently, of the richest man in America, maybe, or in the world. And it's just a super dangerous precedent. At least the backlash caused them to sort of back off this. But, I was frustrated that there were some Republicans that in Arizona really did a good job pushing for things like the I-10 expansion. And that is one of the things that was potentially at jeopardy here with this. And that includes with the potential of the infrastructure spending mm-hmm. from before.
Yeah.
You got a guy like Senator Shope. And he was very quiet about it. At least, Congressman Stanton sent a letter saying, hey, we need at least clarification on what on earth it is that you're going to be funding and what you're not funding because we have stuff that we need to do. And so, hopefully this is getting figured out. But it's you know, it's much bigger than just like a freeze. Like, this was a huge problem.
But one of the issues, I think, for Democrats, you know, for about 2 months, they'd been really rudderless. This is the first time they had a cohesive message in the resistance, if you will. And it was the first time they really found some footing and able to attack Donald Trump and actually score some points. I mean, hey, the memo got rescinded, whatever that means. You know, there was some action. There were Republicans who were very concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, in Republican states, the Medicaid portals went down, right? So there was a lot of concern. And one of the things I think is, you know, we've really heard a lot about this is going to be a much more focused Trump administration compared to the first. This is going to be a much more professionalized administration compared to the first. And this was kind of bungled, whichever way.
Yeah, this felt like a fumble the way they did it.
Whatever they meant to do, they didn't do it well.
Yeah. So Tony Barrett mentioned, you know, lots of questions about a lot of money, you know, affecting the state budget. Another potential question affecting the state budget is who is Governor Hobbs's budget director going to be? Now, typically, negotiations don't really start in earnest till a little bit later in the year. But it seems like potentially a problem that the Governor's Office of Management and Budget does not have a director right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem in the sense that it's an important job that has a tremendous amount that you have to do in order to get the, you know, the budget approved, and you have to work with and look at the work that the previous budget director did with, you know, in previous sessions where they had to go and talk to individual Republican legislators, figure out what their like priorities are, find a way to make a deal with the leadership. And so, yeah, I think it's problematic in the sense that, like, I'm sure you would like to have a full team, but this stuff, you know, happens where people move on or, you know, it's a really not – I'm going to surprise everybody with this. It's really not fun to work in government all the time, especially at that level, especially when you're dealing with, like, the legislature and that stuff. And I'm always surprised when people are putting in as much time as they are. I think, to me, a lot of these jobs are, like, two-year jobs, and people are normally, like, you know, stepping aside. So I don't think it's, like, that big of a deal that someone's stepped aside. That kind of stuff just happens.
You know, it does just happen. I've been in government. I've seen the churn. It usually doesn't happen in the middle of a budget, however. And, look, I don't know. Tony may disagree, but I bet he would actually agree. The last two budgets under Hobbs have been much more Republican-centric. And I think, you know, Democrats in the legislature haven't been happy with the last two budgets. Right. Some Republicans haven't been happy because it spends, you know, too much, it spends a little differently than they would prefer. But Democrats have been hopping mad that the negotiations haven't been, you know, a bit more even. They've been a little bit one-sided. These last two budgets, I mean, I hear all the time that the current budget that we're in was really driven by the chief of staff for the Arizona House of Representatives. It was a Michael Hunter budget. Shout out to Michael Hunter. you know, the Republicans really have ruled the last couple of budgets. And I think Democrats are unhappy about that. And part of that stems from an inability to really get top staff. Because, again, a budget is incredibly complicated. $17 billion, $15 billion, whatever.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And it's very intricate. There's no doubt about that. It takes someone who's had years of experience. And I don't think Hobbs's budget director had that kind of experience.
Do you think the fact that the governor's budget director, Sarah Brown, stepped down yesterday, does that impact how this – the budget that will be negotiated before July 1st, does that affect that at all, do you think?
It should. It really should affect it because, again, this was the governor's point person on numbers. You know, we were talking before the show about how Janet Napolitano, former governor, would negotiate the budget herself, no staff. Katie Hobbs is not Janet Napolitano and needs the staff and needs good staff. And I don't know that she has that. But the legislature does. Michael Hunter is a budget guru. Matt Gress, who is on the legislature on House Appropriations, used to be Sarah Brown
Under
Governor Ducey. But he also had a lot of experience at JLBC, the legislature's budget arm, for years before that. So he was very familiar with a lot of agencies. He didn't just step into the role of creating a budget from nothing, right?
And he's still gotten a little bit of hot water, if you remember, when it came to the projections about the flat tax, because that was, like, not true, if you remember, like, who was getting the tax cut. They were very manipulative back. This is, I'm talking about Matt Gress. And so, you know, I guess experience sometimes comes to the ability to try and deceive the public in order to get something through.
Well, Tony, do you think, Tony?
I don't know about deceive. You know, projections are just that. They're projections. And whether you're
well,
on
when you
or
say,
off,
but, well, all right.
I mean, that's like calling Governor Hobbs' budget a fraud because caseload growth was higher than anticipated. Is it fraud or were they just inaccurate?
Well, when you say that like a huge percentage of Arizonans are going to get a tax cut, but the vast majority of people won't even get the amount of money that it would take to pay for a month of Netflix, I say that's dishonest.
All right. Well, we can agree
Netflix
to disagree
is,
on the
Netflix
semantics
is expensive.
Of that. Let's not throw Netflix under the bus. Tony, I mean, do you think the fact that Sarah Brown has left, is that – and maybe combined with some of the uncertainty about the availability of federal money, what does that do to the budget process, at least right now at the end of January?
Well, it becomes an all-hands-on-deck type situation. You have to fill – you're going to have to fill the, you know, the role that she was serving. I mean, she's there for another couple weeks. And so things will be farther along, of course, just in that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also just not the kind of thing that one person does. And so it's not like the quarterback is gone. You know, that's not the way that it's operated in this administration, is that, you know, it's a team effort. And so I'm sure they're going to be fine going forward.
Yeah, right. There's a whole office, OSPB, right? There's a whole – but I would say the quarterback is the director. And now you're going to have some backup who's also untested.
Tony, there's a lot of consternation, a lot of drama this week, both at the legislature and outside the legislature, about the fate of the Isaac School District in Phoenix. A lot going on. The legislature kind of stepped in at the last minute there to try to make sure that teachers would continue to get paid. This seems, I mean, I don't know what the right word for it. It just kind of seems like a big mess.
Yeah, it is a big mess. But the legislature didn't really step in and fix anything. The legislature saw, you know, Matt Gress, talking about a second, saw an opportunity to get media. He stepped up. But his bill never moved. He hasn't actually done anything. The solution to this problem looks like it came from the educators and the school with, like, you know, the deal that they're making with Tolleson that's going to hopefully, give them the cash that they need in order to keep the teachers paid and the doors open. And so right now it looks like everything comes down to the treasurer, you know, John Allen, you know,
County
treasurer John Allen, where, you know, he is going to have to, you know, he should push the button. He should allow this to go through, because, you know, if there isn't a guarantee of pay, I'm not sure that the educators and everybody are going to be there on Monday. Like, we got to keep the doors open. There's a real problem. I'm not trying to minimize the situation they're in, but it's not the fault of the educators. It's not the fault of the students. It's not the fault of the parents.
Well, it's certainly not any of their fault, the kids or the teachers. But it is the fault of the Isaac School District leadership. We already saw the superintendent step down.
Mm-hmm.
The Gress bill, I thought certainly it was a short-term solution. And I think the reason it hasn't moved is because Tolleson has stepped up, which I think begs a whole other question. Who knew Tolleson just had $25 million sitting around? And why does Tolleson just have $25 million sitting around that they can give to another district? I think that's odd.
They can invest. Yeah, it's an investment for them.
Yeah, it's an investment, sure. I just think that is a strange thing that the citizens who are in Tolleson maybe should ask.
Well,
why
it's facilities
that money,
but I guess we don't need to get too.
Yeah, but why that money?
School funding is very complicated,
right.
as we all know here.
School funding is incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
To go back to our previous conversation about budgets, it really is. But I think that is weird that they have $25 million. But, you know, Gress, I thought, saw much more than a media opportunity. I think he saw at least a short-term solution to ensure that teachers get paid for the next couple of weeks, next couple of paychecks. And I think that was important. The thing is, the county has floated Isaac for months to the tune of almost $30 million. It's not like the county, didn't do anything, but it wasn't even their job to do something, right? It's not John Allen's job to do this. He is the bank, if you will. And Isaac just doesn't have the money. And why the Isaac School Board hadn't addressed this previously is a good question. And I think they probably need to go. And I think the important piece of the Gress bill, which should be looked at anyways, is if you're in a receivership, the board should go.
Yeah, that was one of the provisions of his bill, is that we should point out their elected school board members would have basically been fired. It's going to be a lot more on that for sure. Guys, let me ask you about Governor Hobbs' state Supreme Court justice appointment this week, the first that she has, Maria Elena Cruz. Tony, were you surprised at the questions she got? I mean, she is a Latina. She is Black. And a lot of the questions at her announcement related to that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because of the amount of, you know, oh boy, how do I say this? But there's, you know, there is this movement among the right that to, you know, say that anybody who gets a job that is not a white person, that it's a DEI hire. This is a very qualified person. And so I wasn't surprised that there were questions about that. I was disappointed. I was frustrated. But, you know, I mean, like the big news here is that like for the there's now somebody appointed by a Democratic governor on the Supreme Court.
And first time
there
in a
hasn't
long
been
time.
In a very
first time
long
in a
time.
Long time. And in fact, this may even be the last one for a long time. You know, I don't know if there are any more retirements coming up in the next 2 years. I don't think so, but there someone could surprise. So this may be her only stamp on the court in the 4 years.
Her being the governor.
The governor. The Hobbs's only stamp on the court.
Tony, I'm curious. You don't seem – why are you not thrilled with this pick?
No, I am thrilled with this pick.
Well, you said disappointed. Was that in the questions?
Oh, I was disappointed in the way that people were – on social media, right? So we were being critical of her. I think she's a great pick. Yeah. I'm sorry if I misspoke. I did not mean to imply that at all.
Barrett, to the point that Justice Cruz will be the only Democratic appointed justice on the court probably doesn't change much on the court. But I wonder, you know, Ann Scott Timmer, one of the other justices, mentioned, you know, Justice Cruz is from, I believe, Yuma, a rural part of the state outside of Maricopa County. Not a lot of perspectives like that on the court. I mean, what do you think she brings?
I actually think that is maybe more important than her ethnic background. I think being from a rural part of the state, Yuma, giving that perspective on things, though the person she's replacing was from Prescott, I believe. So
Robert Brutnell, yeah.
Right. We are sort of trading one rural for another rural. But I do think that it's important to have the rural perspective, something more than out of just Tucson and Phoenix.
Okay. Barrett, let me ask you about Senate President Warren Peterson. He filed papers to start the process of looking into a run for attorney general. He's talked about doing this before, so it's not necessarily a surprise. If he decides to jump in, that would make two Republicans who are in the primary to presumably challenge Chris Mays in her bid for re-election. Rodney Glassman has already announced that he is going to run. I'm curious at this point, of course, this is a long way away when votes are actually cast. If it's Peterson, if it's Glassman, like, how do you see that race shaping up so far?
Well, look, Glassman has, of course, your listeners will be very familiar with him. He's run almost every 2 years. I think he took this cycle off. So he has run several statewide and county races up here. He was a actual city councilman down in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're both trying to be as MAGA as possible. It's going to be an interesting primary. There's questions about whether actually Warren Peterson, the Senate president, is actually even eligible to be the attorney general. He just got his law degree in 2023. So he's a reasonably new lawyer, and Rodney Glassman, I see, is already hitting him on the fact he has no real legal experience other than getting his law degree. He writes the laws, that's for sure. But I do think this is going to be it's going to be one of the nastier elections, both primary and general, no matter who comes out of the primary for the Republicans.
I mean, the guy that hired the cyber ninjas, Warren Peterson, is going to run for attorney general. The paperwork you were talking about, finally, I thought maybe it was like to get – you know, qualified to the bar. He has no experience. He told me on Twitter when I pointed this out to him a couple of weeks ago, he said, well, but, you know, I've hired lawyers and they've won lawsuits. Well, that's great. I hired a plumber who came in and was able to fix, you know, my toilet and fix the issue with our shower. I don't think that means I can go next door and say, oh, but I hired that guy and he did a good job. Don't you want to hire him? It's just a ridiculous it's an inexperienced type of message that he's using. I imagine there's probably going to be another candidate because I can't think that these are the strongest candidates Republicans have.
You know, I mean, Rodney Glassman, he came up just short 2 years ago against Abe Hamada. In the primary. Came up a little bit short. It was a crowded field. I think it will be a less crowded field. I think there will be some coalescing around just, you know, these top two candidates.
You don't see anybody else getting in, Barrett?
You know, look, there's anyone could sort of look in the mirror one day and say, you know, I can throw in a couple of $1 million. I can ring, you know. I mean, we had six people, I think, run in the Republican primary 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't do anyone well because now you're really just splitting up that and you're hoping for 20, 25% to win the race.
Do either of them, you mentioned, Barrett, that you think that it's going to be a messy race. We have just about a minute or so left. Do you see, depending on which one of them makes it out of the primary, assuming it's just those two, and assuming that Chris Mayes does run for re-election as AG, do you see either of them knocking Chris Mayes off?
Absolutely. Look, Tony will disagree with me all he wants, but this is still a Republican state. Even Donald Trump won, and it really wasn't that close. This is a Republican state. And while Chris Mayes has been a very activist attorney general, has gotten a lot of media. Some of her lawsuits, I think, are more media-centric rather than legally sound. And so I think that will play a big part in this campaign, and she'll be very active. But I do believe, you know, you'll see a top of the ticket in 2 years that is a pretty strong top of the ticket for governor. And I think that you're going to just see a pretty big Republican sweep.
What do you think, Tony, quickly before
I think that as Attorney General, Chris Mayes has done more to fight for affordability and against corporations that are trying to take advantage of consumers than any Attorney General that we've had since Terry Goddard. And so I think that if she's got a lot of good stuff to run on, she's accomplished a lot. She's really stepped up on important issues when it comes to, you know, whether it's actually going after, you know, these senior living homes that were just, you know, essentially abusing
and the sober living home.
The sober living, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I think she's got a fantastic record to run on, and she will have things to talk about. And I think that the opponents will be talking about MAGA stuff. And so we'll see how it goes.
All right. That is Tony Khani, Barrett Marson. Thanks, guys, both for coming in. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.